that Super Bowl, and they really didn't miss much. We'll snipe on it just a smidge. LSU basketball, reality check. LSU football recruiting. Down the stretch they come, and we're less than 2 weeks away from the start of what could be a remarkable college baseball season. All these stories and more coming your way today, Monday, February 4th, 2019.
Shotgun snap, arches a pass down the near sideline, over the shoulder, diving catch at the 5, Gronkowski, down to the 2, falls, he was double teamed, down the sideline, it's a pickup of 29. First and goal at the 2, I formation. Brady under center, spins, hands off Michelle, but blocked by Devon. The run over the left guard, touchdown New England. The game's first touchdown with 7 to play in the fourth, and the Patriots have gone on top, 9-3 over the Rams. Snap and a line drive pass down the near side, and intercepted, a leaping two-handed interception at the 5. Stephon Gilmore, the all-pro quarterback, has just intercepted the Rams quarterback, Jared Goff. Brady, under center, victory formation, takes the snap, falls to an E, and that'll do it. The New England Patriots have won. The Patriots, their second Super Bowl championship in the last 3 years, and they have tied an NFL record. Tied the Pittsburgh Steelers with 6 Super Bowl championships.
And good afternoon and welcome. Yes, indeed, the Patriots win it yet again. Their 6th. Remarkable. Remarkable the longevity of that ball club. But heck, You couldn't tell if you were in New Orleans because, man, there was a Mardi Gras going on in the streets. Super Bowl 53 earned a 26.1 rating in New Orleans. That's the lowest of any market that they measure and the lowest ever in New Orleans. Now, take this in consideration. There have been several Super Bowls that have taken place on a Sunday when Bacchus was rolling. And there was no New Orleans Saint dog in the fight. So even when they had Bacchus and no Saints game, this one still ranked the lowest, even more so than that. And you know how much draw those parades are. So the Saints fans sending a message, we're not interested, we don't like it. And I guess the football god said, we're not going to let the Rams win this thing because they shouldn't have been in this thing in the first place. Plain and simple, the lowest scoring Super Bowl in Super Bowl history. And beauty's in the eye of the beholder. It just is. So you're going to have some people saying, that was the worst game. Then why did you watch? You had a chance to turn the screen TV off. You don't need to watch it if you hate it. You know, if it's that bad, turn it off. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So many people being critical of the commercials and the halftime show. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I personally am a Maroon 5 fan. I'm not so sure about taking the shirt off and all. I don't know what that proves. And Big Boy, that was good. I mean, I enjoyed it, but that's just me. If you don't like it, hey, let us know. Email me, askjordy@gmail.com. askjordy@gmail.com. Tell me what you thought. Tell me what you think. You can call us at 336-706-0111. I thought the Bud Light commercial, Dilly Dilly with the joust that turned into the Game of Thrones promo, I thought that was awesome. I thought that was great. How much did that bad boy cost to produce? Holy schmoly. The Verizon tearjerkers with the first responders. Yes. Yes, indeed. And there were some other ones that I didn't like that maybe you loved. And vice versa. Again, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But football is over and done with. The Saints did not get to the Super Bowl. Drew Brees did not win the MVP award. That went to the Patriots and Pat Mahomes, respectively. Okay, so now it's time to move on. And we thought we'd get a little respite from things. We thought that the LSU basketball team would help us out in a pinch, and they didn't. You fall behind. Look, I've seen LSU basketball this year have big leads and squander them, a la Florida State, maybe Houston. And I've seen them with huge deficits and come from behind and make a fast and furious finish like they did against Missouri. But you can only go to that well so many times. And sooner or later, preferably sooner, it's going to bite you. And it did against Arkansas. They fell behind by 18 points. Arkansas shooting the lights out. LSU gets it back. I mean, they're right there. And then an ill-advised alley-oop from Tremont Waters to Marlon Taylor. But I can't fault the guys, because how many times have they done? It's like Sean Payton. Okay, you love Sean Payton because he goes for it on fourth down and he converts it. And every once in a while, they don't. And you go, oh, man. But you don't want to take that bravado out of him. You don't want to take that bravado out of Tremont Waters and Marlon Taylor. How many times have we seen Trey throwing up one up the alley and Marlon throwing down the oop? How many? Even when it's a bad pass and Marlon has to grab it down below his waist and then quickly bring it up and flush it through. Well, late in the ball game, ill-advised pass, but still, again, was it? I mean, I love the risk-taking. I love the chance that you're being aggressive and that you believe in one another. Just didn't work. And that time, Arkansas got the win. Wasn't because of that one play at the end. It's because all the 21 turnovers earlier and not defending well enough, where Arkansas is shooting over 50% from twos and over 50% from threes. That's what happened. So we have a busy, busy show planned for you and yours. My former teammate, the All-American Rudy Macklin, and I will break down the LSU-Arkansas game, take a look ahead. The stretch run gets really, really interesting starting Wednesday in Starkville against Mississippi State. So we'll talk about that. Shelby Mast, as he does each and every Monday during the college basketball season, Bracket WAG. He is our bracketologist and the college basketball bracketologist for USA Today. He will join us, tell us what that loss did to LSU. I know it dropped them, had to drop them. A home loss against an unranked team? Oh, absolutely dropped them, as it did LSU in the polls from 19 down to 23. But it will also take a look, as you know, one bad loss can be rectified by a couple of good wins. At Mississippi State on Wednesday, a ranked team. Auburn at home on Saturday, a ranked team. And maybe one of the top ranked teams in America, the Kentucky Wildcats, making a strong push right here, right now. That's in Lexington next Wednesday. So a chance to really do some damage. Lessons to be learned? Absolutely. I'd much rather have lessons learned following a win than lessons learned following a loss. But it is what it is. So we'll talk with Shelby Mast about that. Wednesday is National Signing Day. The final visits are in. The players have gone home. They are making their decisions. Does LSU know what those decisions are going to be? I think they probably got a wink and a nod from a couple. We'll talk with Billy Embody of Go247 Sports in hour number two and get the very latest lowdown. LSU did get one commitment from the weekend, a JUCO defensive lineman. We'll talk about that. And then take me out to the ballpark. Take me out to the crowd. Get by me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever come back. Baseball right around the corner. Raging Cajuns, always good. LSU has a chance to be elite. We will talk with Brody Miller, who covers the Tigers for NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune, in hour number two as well. Your phone calls, always welcome, 706-0111. Your emails as well, askjordy@gmail.com. Super Bowl 53, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Guess who thinks it was beautiful? Everybody who's a New England Patriot fan. Guess who thought it was boring and just pitiful? Every New Orleans Saints fan, and maybe all those others around the country. But beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And for the Patriot fans, that was a Picasso on turf. Yes, it was. All right, we'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Seriously, Bud Light, Game of Thrones, combo, you had to like that. But I'm a big Game of Thrones fan, and they had the dragon out there breathing the fire. It was awesome. Come on back with us.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
We're back 16 minutes after the hour, 337-706-0111. Couple little tidbits here. It leaves you wondering, doesn't it? I mean, look, it kind of brings me – LSU went to the Final Four in basketball back in 1981, and they had to play Indiana. Indiana had Isaiah Thomas, a great, great team. They went on to win the national championship. They had Bobby Knight sitting on the bench, and he'd been there and done that and taken all the postcards you wanted. We had Dale Brown, a very good coach. Never had been there. It was a first. Our team, first time we ever went there. And you looked across the way and you're going, man. And Indiana had an advantage from the jump because of that experience and knowing how to handle that environment. It just happens. I promise you, the same thing happened. Sean McVay looks across the way at Bill Belichick and going, man, this is my first foray here. This guy's been here 9 times. He's won 5 of them. Holy cow. I got to believe in my heart of hearts. I really do. The fact that Sean Payton has been there and won one, Drew Brees has been there and won one, they would have put up a much better show than Sean McVay and Jared Goff. I got to believe that. Now, maybe that's my black and gold homerism coming through, but I really believe it would have been a better game. I think Sean McVay, I mean, what'd he do? He made no adjustments, didn't do anything, never gave the ball to Todd Gurley. You don't think Payton's giving it to Alvin Kamara? I mean, come on. Mark Ingram, come on. And then that play-action pass works to Michael Thomas. And I think the Saints' defense was terrific. But we'll never know. We'll never know. Boy, Saints fans picked a beautiful sunny afternoon for the blackout and gold. Who cares about the Super Bowl? There may have been more people on the streets than in that Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. Certainly having a lot more fun. We'll never know. Next year, the Saints, one of the top 4 favorites to get to the Super Bowl and win it all. And Drew Brees says, it's as our window, we've got to take advantage of it. So we'll see just how hungry they are when they come back and ready to go and what kind of changes they make to the roster. And you know there will be some. So I kind of believe, though, right? It was going to be better. Had to be. But that's neither here nor there. Shout out to New England. They get it done again. Meanwhile, across the street, in that venue known as the Smoothie King Center, the trade deadline is coming up February the 7th, which is Thursday at about 2 o'clock our time. And now it's been reported that Anthony Davis has a list of 4 teams that he would sign long-term with. And these are multiple reports coming out today. Of course, the Los Angeles Lakers are one. The New York Knicks are another. Now, they just got rid of Porzingis, but they have that one carrot out there, and that's that number one draft pick. Is that going to be enough? Doubtful. No. The Milwaukee Bucks are on the list. Milwaukee, close to Chicago, a much better roster than the Bulls have. Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak. I don't know. They're 2 of their best assets could hit the open market this season. That's Malcolm Brogdon, the guard from Virginia, the 2017 NBA Rookie of the Year. He's actually older than Anthony Davis by 3 months. He's a restricted free agent this summer. Chris Middleton is likely to opt out of the final year of his deal. So to make that deal work, Milwaukee would most certainly need a third or fourth team to hop in. And the other one is the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers have yet to offer anything to the Pelicans, and they're holding out for cap space this summer. That leaves the Lakers and the Knicks. The Knicks' trade chance centers around them landing the number one overall pick in the upcoming draft. They currently have the worst record in the NBA. They have a 14% chance of landing the top pick thanks to the new lottery odds in which the bottom three teams all have an equal chance at the number one pick. So we'll see. Of course, any team can still trade for Davis this season, except for the Celtics because of the way of Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving's contracts are structured. Oklahoma City traded for Paul George without any assurance he'd re-sign, and the Thunder ultimately convinced him to stay. Toronto's in the same process with Kawhi Leonard now and hoping he stays after this season. But it's starting to get a little bit clearer. Now, if those are the only, I don't know if this is actual or if this is just Anthony Davis's camp and his agent saying, all you other people stay away because he really wants to be a Laker. And they're the only two ones that are offering a multitude of players and picks. We'll know. We'll see. I sincerely doubt anything will happen by the 7th of February, but does this send a message to Danny Ainge and the Boston Celtics? Hey, don't waste your time. If I go, it's going to be a one-year deal. And Anthony Davis's dad said, I would never have my son sign with the Celtics long-term after what they did to young Isaiah Thomas, showing no loyalty. So take everything with a grain of salt. You just don't know. Time will tell. Only people that know are the ones that are picking up the phones and making the deals. And so far, all things quiet in the Pelicans camp. All things quiet. So we'll see. And we'll be there to keep you up to speed. Super Bowl 54, the betting odds are out. And it's the same teams, just like the NBA. It's the same teams. Could the Saints and the Rams meet again for a spot in the Super Bowl? Well, an early look at the betting lines suggests that that is a strong possibility. The Patriots and Chiefs, widely thought of as the Super Bowl favorites for the game scheduled to be played February 5th in Miami, but the bookmakers have the Rams and the Saints as the two NFC teams with the best odds. The Rams slightly ahead of the Saints. One Sportsbook USA has the Rams and the Saints both at 8-1. They list the Chiefs as the overall favorite at 6-1 with the champion Patriots at 8-1. So there you have it. Then right behind, it's kind of a big gap because the Chargers, the Bears, the Steelers are at 14-1. Minnesota, Green Bay, Dallas, 16-1. How about Philly, Baltimore, Indianapolis, Cleveland, and Houston at 20-1. Not much love for the NFC South. Atlanta is at 40-1. Carolina is at 60-1. Tampa Bay, 80-1. And the team with the longest odds to get there is the host team. The Miami Dolphins listed at 300-1. So, man, just take some time, get healthy, get re-energized, and get back to work because it's in Miami. It'll be the 10th anniversary of the Saints winning their one and only Super Bowl, and they got a shot. Got a shot. The window is really closing rapidly. Really closing rapidly. So we'll see. We'll see. Plain and simple. We'll see. 706-0111, 706-0111. We'll get into LSU basketball shortly. That was a tough game. The major thing I got out of the game was the PMAC is back. The fans were there, baby. Not a seat to be had. Rocking, packed. Now, when the Tigers fell behind by 18, there wasn't much to cheer for. Started to make a little run. And then that place started to bubble over and start to become the loud venue that it is. And I wasn't there. I was doing some games out of town, and I had a friend tell me it's the loudest it's been in about 10 years. And that's awesome. And Will Wade certainly commended the fans and thanked them for doing their part. Disappointed in his team. Too many turnovers, and we'll get into that. And, you know, you live on that edge long enough, you're going to fall off on the wrong side eventually. So you got to play a full 40 minutes. There are no gimmies in this league. There are no gimmies. And you've got to play and you got to be focused. And you can't worry about who you're playing. You got to worry about what you do and how well you do it. And if you do it that way, you'll be fine. Because you'll treat everybody the same way. The crowd will get you up and above and beyond. But you got to take care of your business and look at the other team as just a nameless, faceless entity and go about your business. I think LSU took Arkansas for granted. I think they thought a packed house, oh, we're going to be fine. And here comes Arkansas. Boom, 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 boom. Knocking down shots left and right. You look up at the scoreboard, you go, holy moly, we're down 18? Sheesh, here we go. We better kick it up. We better do something. And they made their push, and they were right there. Right there. And they had really good looks at the end to win it. Shot just didn't fall. That's how it works. That's how it works. All right, much more coming up on that tough, tough loss. My buddy Rudy Macklin joins me. Next, how does it affect LSU in the bracket and in the polls? Shelby Mast, bracket WAG. After that, this is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Remember, beauty in the eye of the beholder. It's all that matters is what you think, not what anybody else thinks. Either you loved it or you hated it. That's your call. We'll be right back.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Hey, welcome back, boys and girls and ladies and gentlemen. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. LSU basketball suffers their first loss in conference play. Here again, flirting with danger early, fall behind by as many as 18 points, a dramatic comeback that comes up just short, Arkansas with a 90-89 win. Let's spend 10 good minutes with the All-American, the all-time leading rebounder in LSU basketball history, second leading scorer all-time, and never shy to tell it like it is, my main man, Rudy Macklin. Mac, what's up, buddy? How are you? You fool around with those basketball gods enough, they'll come up and bite you, man. And this has been a trend for LSU, falling behind, and they fell behind a little bit too much Saturday.
Yeah, they did. I got to give it to Arkansas because the last time they played in Arkansas, Arkansas didn't shoot the ball particularly well.
Yeah.
But this they hit shots, and they created space for themselves and hit those open jump shots, man, and also – the big guy inside, he is just unstoppable in there because he posts down low so well, and he's very strong. But I got to give it to the Arkansas team because a number of fouls, plagued them throughout the later stages of the game, and they lost some key people due to foul trouble, and they still hung in there. And so LSU, they can't continue to flirt with that was a mediocre team like Arkansas, who's turned out to be a pretty good team now.
Yeah.
Comes to time for tournament play, we got to learn how to put people away. And so,
you're one good shooting day from being a decent team to being a really good team. And to your point, Arkansas 58% from the field, 54% from 3-point range, and LSU turned the ball over 21 times. That's just That's a recipe for disaster. I'm shocked LSU made it that close.
And from a point guard like Waters, you would expect him to protect the ball much better. And for Arkansas to shoot that well on the road in front of a hostile crowd, a sellout crowd, that shows that they're really a team that's on the upswing. But the turnovers hurt us, man. The turnovers hurt us bad, and we got to play with a little more of a killer instinct to put teams away and protect the basketball. And they do that, they should be okay.
That place was rocking, wasn't it? That was like the old-time days.
It felt good, man. I mean, oh, my gosh, I just had to sit there and take it all in. And down the latter stages of the game, they just did not execute like they should have.
You know, we've seen the Waters to Marlon Taylor alley-oop and dunk and highlight film package game after game after game. Timing, and it's worked. That play's worked. Like, I haven't seen them miss one yet. Even when it was a bad pass, Taylor would get it and gather it and dunk it down. Does Waters want to do that one over again?
He does. That was not a good time to throw that pass. Because it was a late stage of the game, seconds left on the clock, basically, and I would have tried not to make that pass and get something going to the basket and either get fouled or score the ball. Uh-huh. But I'm sure he want to take it back, but that's a lesson learned for him, and so next time around, they'll know better.
Rudy Mack, I mean, you look at the stats. LSU, 44 rebounds, Arkansas, 20. LSU, 32 of 38 from the free throw line. Arkansas 7 of 11. You look at those two stat lines, and I'm telling you, LSU at home wins by double figures. But there's that three-point line, right?
That three-point line will do it, and the fouls that that Arkansas had gotten, man, a lot of those calls were a little touchy to me. But we at home, and I expect to get some favorable calls at home. But that's what pretty much got them back in the game. Because every time Arkansas come down the floor, they call a foul on them. And so, but LSU has to learn to put these teams away, especially at home. You got to protect your home base.
Yeah.
Because when you go on the road, you want to have some type of confidence going on the road.
Did they overlook Arkansas, in your opinion?
I would say yes, because they handled them pretty well in Arkansas in front of their home crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came to our home crowd, knowing they beat them pretty handily back there, that they thought they could take them here because they thought the crowd would lead them into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't take it for granted, especially with that guy on that bench by the name of Anderson.
Yeah.
He's a pretty doggone good coach.
Yeah.
Now, just to remind you, Jordy, he doesn't have a junior or a senior on his team.
Yeah.
He has freshmen and sophomores. And he has got this team ready to play LSU at home in front of this crowd. He's preparing his team for March. Okay, so that's his philosophy, it seems like. Don't judge me now early in the season. Judge me when you get time for close to March.
And he's got a pro player in Daniel Gafford, to your point. 23 points, 8 rebounds. He had 32 against LSU up in Fayetteville in overtime. So that's a pro player.
Yeah, it's a pro player. And they don't go to him as much as I think they should with his capabilities. He posts up very low, and he holds his spot. That's that leg strength, that base that he has that I was hoping, that I hope, Nas Reed could get, learn how to post up strong down low and hold your spot. That's what I'm hoping he would have obtained those same skills.
Rudy Macklin, kind enough to join us. Are you of the belief, because there's that old cliche, oh, it's good, that's maybe the best thing that happened to LSU. Now they'll get off their high horse, they'll get back to work, it's a lesson to be learned. I say hogwash to all that. Let's just keep winning.
Yeah, I don't believe in that. You need to lose one get your attention and all that. I don't believe in that. You gotta play to win every game, and you gotta develop that killer instinct. And that's what they're gonna have to develop, is that when you get a team down, you gotta keep them down. And so you do that by doing the little things, you know, rebounding when the rebound is there, making good sharp passes, playing defense, talking on defense, calling out the screens, all the little things that they need to do when it comes down to stretch with playing a good team like Arkansas.
Rudy Macklin, kind enough to join us. Now we're going to really find out what this team's all about, right? These next three games, they're at Mississippi State on Wednesday, home against Auburn, and then they go to your old stomping grounds. They get to go to play at Rupp Arena, and not a hotter team in the country than John Calipari's Wildcats.
Well, that's another one of those teams, Jordy, that Calipari made that phrase famous. Don't judge me in the early part of the year, but
that's
judge me when we get close to March. And they're getting better and better. And so we're going to see what kind of team they are when they go to Rupp Arena in front of 23,000 people. And you can't afford to make mistakes and turnovers like they did against Arkansas.
How did he fall behind by 18? I mean, was it just that Arkansas was shooting the ball so well? Was it a lack of focus? Was it, I mean, that's hard to do when you're a good team to fall behind by 18.
Well, Arkansas ran their stuff, Jordy. They ran their offense all with the shot clock all the way down to the final seconds, pretty much, and they made LSU chase them and play them straight up defense, and so they just executed their offense.
Action. It's hard when your backcourt, Waters with 5 turnovers, Mays with 4 turnovers. That normally doesn't happen with Skylar Mays. Was it so much pressure by Arkansas, or was it just carelessness by the Tigers?
A combination of both. You know, Arkansas always had that philosophy, you know, 40 minutes of hell.
Right.
And they've always played, you know, straight in your face defense. But Skylar Mays, he hadn't really been shooting the ball particularly well the last couple of games. When that happens, you got to take the ball to the basket. But the turnovers, we're going to have to not rely on the fancy, good, big plays all the time, but just the basic passes to your teammates up and down the court is good enough. You got to know when to make the big play and when to just be conservative. And they hadn't learned that yet. But that's a young team. They'll learn.
Yeah. Humphrey Coliseum, Mississippi State. You know what I remember the most about that place?
Is
when we warmed up, they had that jazz ensemble that was playing good music. Remember that?
Yes, indeed. They did do that. It's not a town you want to hang out in, but in Starksville, they play some pretty good basketball. And the thing that I remember the most is our freshman year, we went there for the first time. They had a guy named Wiley Peck.
I remember.
He was strong. He had 27 rebounds against us, man, And I tell you, man, they beat us by a couple of points, but we were all freshmen. But they had Ray White, I think, back then, right?
Yeah, yeah. Gary Hooker, and those guys.
That's when the SEC was really tight, okay?
Really tight. All right, we'll see if the Tigers... we'll see if the Tigers learn a lesson or not. We always learn a lesson when Rudy Mack breaks down a game for us. Job well done, my friend, as always. Have a good one.
You too, my friend. Take care now.
All right, you take care. Rudy Macklin. Tigers, Wednesday at Mississippi State. What does that affect, that loss affect LSU in the brackets? Shelby Mast tells us next.
Live. The Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 103.7 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
And away we go. Hour number 2 of 2 on this Monday, February the 4th, the day after the Super Bowl, in which Boston, no surprise, was the top television market in the country, watching the game, followed by Richmond, Virginia, and Buffalo, New York. Was it the Rams? Weren't the Rams in the Super Bowl? Where are they? Well, New Orleans, one of the typically one of the strongest neutral markets in the NFL, was dead last among metered markets, down 51% from last year. The boycott, the blackout and gold boycott was strong. How about that? Yes, indeed. All right. We do it every day at this time of day. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Clint Domain, kind enough to join us. CD, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I am doing fantastic, Jordy, after a pretty lackluster Super Bowl.
Yeah.
In fact, I slept through much of the first half. That's how kind of boring it was after that opening interception. It was definitely just punt, 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 punt. In fact, it was the most punts of all time.
Yeah, we're different ages, all right? No question about that. So what did you think of Maroon 5 and Big Boy and all that at halftime?
All right, let's go first off. Big Boy was the highlight of it all.
Okay.
Maroon 5 can just go away forever as far as I'm concerned. Maroon 5, keep the shirt on, buddy. Keep the shirt on. Like, Janet Jackson gets into all kinds of trouble for her popping out, and then you got him taking his shirt off, and that is fine and dandy.
Bring Janet Jackson back.
Yes.
I like their music. I like their music. I really do. I got to admit, I like the music. I didn't like the shirt off. But Big Boy, I like the way you move. That was cool. Yep. Favorite commercial? You got one?
I'd have to say it's the NFL 100, that banquet. That was probably cool. The pinnacle of like all of the NFL. It was perfect. I didn't even realize like until like that day, I was like, they were talking about the 100th anniversary. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
100 years of the NFL. Did not realize that.
Did they do the Saints justice? They put Breeze and Kamara on first.
Well, it sounds about right, Jordy. But, you know, you were talking about it, how beauty's in the eye of the beholder or the beer holder in some cases, Jordy. But was this the worst Super Bowl ever in your mind? Because I'm definitely leaning towards it.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And the commercials didn't live up to par. And it's hard. It's hard to top them. You know, they're spending over $5 million for a 30-second television spot. Just come advertise on the Jordy Helper Show. We'll give you more bang for your buck for a heck of a lot less. It was pretty bad. Pretty bad.
It was just everything about it was a mess. I saw this a while back. Somebody did a video of the worst Super Bowl ever. It was in the 1999 Super Bowl was the one they focused in on. That was the Ravens and the Giants, if I'm not mistaken. Two very much stew-bump quarterbacks. Ew. Definitely was the worst one. But this one was just, you could not get into it. I mean, when I woke up around halftime, I saw it was 3-0. I'm like, what happened? What's going on? These are like two of the best teams. I'm like, okay, well. But it makes me wonder, Jordy, because I was up for the first drive, and the first penalty was on your boy Coleman. Is
How
it kind
about
of
that?
Kind of karma there, Jordy?
Way too little, way too late. Sheesh. I don't know. I'm just glad it's over and done with, and we can move on.
Yeah, we can move on, Jordy, indeed, and move on to next season. And looking ahead to Super Bowl 54, of course, the Patriots are their early favorites. But looking towards the Saints specifically, Jordy, what's the most important thing in your mind for the Saints to do if they want to have a chance of making it back to the promised land?
Get another wide receiver for Drew Brees to throw to. All right. Go get another pass rusher. And you can't have enough good defensive backs. So wide receiver, pass rusher, another defensive back, and everything else I think is A-OK. Maybe Kamara becomes a better punt returner, kickoff returner. I like him there. Just keep it going, man. Keep it going. This will be the 10th anniversary of the Saints' first and only Super Bowl. It'll be in the same venue as they won the Super Bowl. And no teams had worse luck go against them in back-to-back seasons than the Saints. NFL, make it happen, baby. Make it happen. Let's go.
I have to agree with you, Jordy. I definitely wouldn't mind seeing the Saints get another wide receiver, but I feel like going reverse of what Coach O was talking about ahead of the early signing period, where he was talking about defensive line, defensive line, defensive line, defensive line. I think it's offensive line, offensive line, offensive line, offensive line, because you need to have more depth for when Teron Armstead gets hurt. It's not if.
That's right.
But when. Yeah. That's the biggest thing.
That's a great point. That's a great point. You're right. It's not if, it's when. You're right. Okay, so let's do that. Let's get a wide receiver. Let's get a pass rusher. And let's roll the dice and let's roll.
Exactly, Jordy. I think that's going to be a big thing. And then the Pelicans, just the wild and wild world of Anthony Davis. You have his dad come out Friday night saying that he doesn't want his son playing for the Boston Celtics.
Right.
And now Anthony Davis comes out with the master list of all the teams that he wants to be a part of in terms of a long-term deal. And the Boston Celtics aren't on that list. You think his dad had something to do with that?
I don't know. I don't know what the deal is with Boston. There's certainly more. I mean, you like Boston or Milwaukee? You ever been to Milwaukee? No offense, but Milwaukee? That's the equivalent of Starkville in the SEC. Milwaukee is to the NBA. I don't understand that one. He's got the Clippers, the Lakers, the Knicks, and the Milwaukee Bucks as the four teams he would sign a long-term extension with. Maybe he wants to play with Giannis, Antetokounmpo, have the biggest point guard, power forward in the league combination. I don't know. None of those teams really thrill me. So, Pels, you own him. You go ahead and do what you got to do.
How can you hate on Milwaukee, Jordy? I mean, it's the good land. How can we not love
there? You ever been there?
Seriously. Never been there.
Dude, you don't want to go there. Trust
well,
me.
Well, hey, you know.
And not at this time of the year, specifically. Oh, my God, it's awful.
And you know what? I'd have to agree with you, Jordy. This time of year, no thank you on that. But sticking with basketball, Jordy, LSU, tough loss to Arkansas on Saturday night, 90-89. Are you concerned about that losing right before you have some stiff competition coming up the next couple weeks? Yeah, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Auburn, Tennessee still looming, Jordy. Are you a little bit concerned right now?
No, I'm not. I think they'll be okay. I hate to see an eye-opener in a loss, but I promise you that the coach has the players' attention now, and the players realize, man, we can't overlook anybody. We're not that good. We got to play hard for 40 minutes. So I think they'll be okay. But come to me at this time a week from now, and I'll have a better answer for you.
I think we all will, Jordy. I know Rudy Macklin was talking about it this past Friday, talking about the fact that he wants to see him play against some tougher competition. He's going to wind up seeing that on Wednesday and Saturday, and then the following week against Kentucky. Yeah. The next three games are going to wind up looming huge. And I'll definitely talk to you about it a little bit more detail over on next Monday's show when we Hot Topics. Got to recap the weekend that was, and it'll be the first weekend without football, Jordy.
I know.
Going to be tough.
What are the three amigos going to do? Well, we'll have to get into the basketball business.
Improv.
We'll figure something out. We'll figure something out. All right, there's your Hot Topics for the day. Thank you, CD. Coming up in this hour, Billy Embody with the very latest in LSU football recruiting. National Signing Day is Wednesday. And then Brody Miller with LSU baseball getting ready to take me out to the ballpark on the 15th of this month. This two Fridays from coming up. And we'll have Brody Miller on to talk about that. But as always, Hot Topics brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. I was out of town this weekend doing some ball games, a little media room food. I had the briefcase, broke out the Cajun Chef, put it on my meal. It's like I was home again. It's the best, the finest spices, the finest peppers. Cajun Chef, bring a little small bottle with you wherever you go because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it right there in St. Martinville, Louisiana for nearly 9 decades. Cajun Chef. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Jordy Helfrich Show. Time to talk recruiting. Brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon. I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. You know, they say win the recruiting battles, you win the games. It's not 100% corollary, but dominating signing days certainly is a more direct path to a double-digit victory total than, say, finishing outside of the top 25 in the recruiting rankings. And the second signing day is Wednesday. So let's get the very latest lowdown on where LSU stands as they try to close out this class with Billy Embody of Go247 Sports. Billy, good day, my friend. How are things as they're counting down the days now to Wednesday?
Well, things are going well. I think LSU coming off of a big official visit weekend with a lot of names on campus and a lot of targets. Feels pretty good about the way things are trending right now for them heading into Wednesday. We can get into all sorts of names and everything, but right now, I mean, I think the big thing is we're starting to get a little bit more clarity on who's going to be in, who's going to be out, and how things are going to shake out.
All right, well, let's get some clarity. They get one commitment over the weekend, and that's Sony Fanua, the JUCO defensive end from Salt Lake City. What do you like about him, and why here, why now?
I like his aggressive play on the edge. I think he's somebody that could find himself with his hand in the dirt as a defensive end or maybe in a stand-up role in certain situations, in stopping the run or things like that. For Dave Aranda's defense, he's 6'4", 265. He's built pretty well, and he's got some underrated athleticism to him. So I think this is a good pickup for LSU, somebody that was looking at mainly Nebraska and Oklahoma State really down the stretch. Those two programs really wanted him badly. LSU put the press on him over the weekend, and he committed and told us as he committed, there was some tears shed over the moment with the coaching staff and his family all there for it.
There are those, Billy, that will say, okay, that's a sign that maybe LSU's not getting some of the other targets they want in Sopcich, Young, or Moore. How do you explain that to those people that have that feeling?
Well, it's kind of two things, right? So you got your defensive line targets like Charles Moore, Byron Young, Ishmael Sopcich, who all made the visit to LSU over the weekend with Sony and a bunch of these other names. And I do think they got probably a feeling that guys like Charles Moore and maybe, but probably Byron Young are going to go elsewhere, meaning, you know, Byron Young's going to stick with Alabama, and then Charles Young wouldn't surprise me if he ended up at Mississippi State when it's all said and done, but Auburn's right. Also been in there. So I think they did kind of have a feeling that those two weren't going to end up in the class, but heading into the weekend, this was a name that we felt like out of the two uncommitted guys that really weren't, that were relatively new names, him and Garmin Randolph, the tight end, that Sony would be the one that they would really make a press for and try and get him on board by the end of the visit. And that's really just what happened. So there are guys that are probably trending away, but more so it was that they liked Sony Fanua and they liked his game and they wanted to bring him on board.
Did they have to promise that the chef at the training table was going to bring some more Polynesian food on tap because of Braden Fajoko, Siaka Ika, and now Fanua? I mean, this is Polynesian you now.
Yeah, it's starting to trend that way. And actually, Ika was a big part of this. They're both from Salt Lake City, and he recruited him pretty hard and helped and hosted him on the visit. So Bill Bush did a real nice job with both of those recruitments. And so they are starting to get certainly a kind of a Polynesian flavor to the roster, that's for sure.
We're talking with Billy Embody, Go247 Sports. So you said there were some names that were trending in, some names that were trending out. We feel good about Sony Fanua. Obviously, he just committed and will in all likelihood sign on Wednesday. Who else are you feeling really, really strong about after these final on-campus official visits?
I think Daphne, Alabama cornerback, Christian Williams, who's committed to Alabama, I think things are set up for him now where he's probably going to end up signing with LSU on Wednesday and making that National Signing Day flip. I mean, you never want to say something's a sure thing, but this has been trending that way for a while. And I think the visit kind of secured things a little bit for LSU in that regard. So I feel good about him jumping on board with LSU on signing day, and then a meet athlete, Devonta Lee, the wide receiver, linebacker, safety. I feel good about where things stand with them, with landing Lee. So he's somebody that's going to announce a decision at 2 o'clock on Wednesday from his high school, right around 2 o'clock on ESPN. Okay. And I do feel good about Devonta Lee.
Who's it down to with him?
LSU and Kentucky is really who I think main players are for him.
Is he going to be the next Devin White? No, he's an offensive player, but then Dave Aranda sees something in him. Maybe there's a need. Where do you think he is best suited to play on the collegiate level?
I think he ends up kind of in a Jacoby Stevens type role. So they bring him off the edge. They, use him as a safety. They play him in space. They do certain things with him. he's going to get his shot at wide receiver, but a lot of people feel his highest ceiling is on the defensive side of the ball.
All right, Billy Embiidy, go to 247 Sports. That's three of the six. You feel good about Fanua, Christian Williams, Devontae Lee. Is there another category, maybe a little less confident, but still confident as to who would fill in the remaining three spots?
I'll add that Maurice Hampton is set to sign with LSU. I'd be surprised if he went anywhere else. That's another one. He's been committed for a while, and he'll be on board. Less confident, but they've got a shot, is really Ishmael Sopcich, of course, and he's the defensive tackle out of A-Mead, and it's LSU Alabama, and I actually just got off the phone with his dad earlier, and he said, you know what, we've been at this for a long, long time, and all these visits really do kind of run together and seem the same and things like that, but they're going to sit down tomorrow night and lay out their options and talk about what they want to do as a family and try and make a decision ahead of his announcement on Wednesday. So that's one that there's some quiet optimism around, but, I mean, with LSU battling Alabama, there's no sure thing there with that one.
Well, how strong are the family ties? I know that, you know, there are those coach and his father has ties with Alabama. It's a lot closer from A-Mead to Baton Rouge. What is the kid looking for, in your opinion? What do you think is going through his mind? Because if he's good at LSU, he's going to play at the NFL. There's enough of a track record of pro players coming out of LSU at all positions, including the defensive line. We just saw Michael Brockers playing for the Super Bowl title. So you've got that. What is it? What do you think he is looking for, and what do you think will tilt the scale in one direction or the other?
I think it's just either he wants to go play at home and stay in state and do those things, and I think his mom could play a bit of a role in that decision part of it and being close to her. You know, some people kind of think he's a bit of a homebody mama's boy that would like to be close to mom, and there's nothing wrong with that. On the other hand, there's a lot of people that think that, you know what, he'll want to go to Alabama, be a part of a deep defensive line class, and, you know, obviously things are going fairly well for Alabama, even though they didn't win a national title this year. There's that pull. I mean, it's going to be interesting because he's never really, you know, he's always just talking about, oh, I want to feel at home, but, I mean, what is home? I mean, home's different to everybody, right?
Sure.
So how does he feel? But that's what he's been looking for. I'm sure as soon as he makes that decision, he'll break down really what really stood out and what really changed for him as far as, you know, whether it's LSU, whether it's Alabama, and we'll kind of get a clearer picture on what he found in this recruiting process.
Billy Embiidy, go to 247 Sports. I was told that Brian Young's visit to LSU, all the visits go really, really well. And you told me a week ago that if you had to pick of your druthers, the better player is Brian Young over Ishmael Sopcich. I know Sopcich's the in-state kid, and you gotta mend those fences and keep him in. But what would it take to get a Brian Young away from Alabama, in your opinion?
Well, I think it would be really, really difficult. I mean, he's somebody that even tweeted out today that he's not taking calls or text messages over the next couple of days, which tells me he's either really locked in on making a decision or he's made a decision, and a lot of what we're hearing right now is that he's going to stick with Alabama, but he hasn't informed LSU of that yet.
All right, so we got four that you feel good about. Sopcich is a slight lean to LSU at number five. Do they fill out the class, or do they leave one empty?
I think there's a chance they end up taking Garmon Randolph, but I think they'll end up just kind of staying put and sticking with 24 signees when it's all said and done.
He is Billy Embiidy. I can't thank you enough, man. I know it's a busy time, but we always appreciate your quick response to us, and thank you for the input. The fans love it. And any more information you need, go to 247 Sports. Billy, Sonny Shipp, Shea Dixon, it's the best in the business, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Jordy. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Billy Embiidy, go to 247 Sports. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more LSU baseball, by many, number one in the country. We'll get the very latest lowdown on them next here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 1037 The Game.
Okay, football season's over. In the throes of the excitement of college basketball, and we're less than 2 weeks away from the start of college baseball. As LSU will get underway on February the 15th, ranked by many as the top team in the country. Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, joins us. He'll be covering the Tigers this season. Not a bad gig, Brody. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, Jordy?
I'm doing terrific. You've been to Media Day. I'm sure you've been to several practices. When you look at this LSU baseball team, this early on, do they give you that appearance of one of those teams that look, wow, and these guys are really good, or do they not?
I mean, they definitely do. I mean, I think the pitching staff, you know, that you definitely get that impression from the pitching staff that even despite some injuries, it has a chance to be, like you said, kind of wow. And then, you know, I think what's going to be interesting is just some of the – it's a team that's loaded and they're as deep as any team in the country, and that's kind of the consensus. But, you know, it's also a team that – has a lot of guys that are supposed to be great that we don't know yet will be. So, you know, okay. You got, you know, Josh Smith coming back from a year out at short, after, you know, back issues last year at shortstop. And you got, you know, these true freshmen in the pitching staff like Landon Marceau and Jaden Hill and Chase Costello and Cole Henry. Guys, you know, there's a lot of guys that you think will do really well this year, but we don't know. So I think there's a little bit of wait and see. It was really interesting that, you know, every site in that publication had been one or two in the country, mm-hmm. but they only had one preseason All-American, and it was a third-team All-American in Zach Hess. So I just think that kind of goes to show you that there's some wait and see on the individual talent, but just the overall talent level is just too much to ignore.
You bring up Zach Hess, and it's really interesting. He did not have a great year last year as a starting pitcher, maybe for a variety of reasons. I think, I don't know if he was 7-6 or 6-5, whatever. How does that warrant All-American status? How does that work?
Yeah, it's tricky. Yeah, I believe he ended up with a, you know, 5+ ERA last year. I mean,
yeah.
I think some of it's going to be, you know, contributing to the fact that he had such a great freshman season, so that's going to factor in. Some of it's going to contribute to, you know, at times he was adjusting to a new role, and at times, like the Arkansas game in the SEC, you know, tournament last year, you know, he pitched the dominant one-hit, seven-inning, you know, performance, and it was fantastic. And he had a few games like that, and then his other games would just be pretty off the rails. You know, it was kind of all or nothing. And then, you know, he really impressed with Team USA this summer. You know, he got great reviews from that and whatnot. So I think it's a good mix of there's been enough evidence of what he can do, okay, mixed with, you know, his freshman year performance, and also just the fact that he is a veteran who's been to the College World Series.
They got to put somebody on the team from the number one ranked team in the country. I got to figure that out. We're talking with Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. You mentioned Josh Smith coming off an injury. Eric Walker missed an entire season. He's coming off that injury after a really, really good freshman campaign. How has he looked, and how are they handling him? Is he full go, or are they being very, very careful with him?
That's one of the other names I forgot to mention. You're absolutely right, Eric Walker. Yeah, I think, you know, I don't think he's full go, as in he's going to be going, you know, complete games or anything like that. I think they're being a little careful with him. But in general, he is on schedule. I mean, everything is, I think, if anything, it's some of those freshman arms are actually pushing. I think he'll have a weekend spot for sure. But I think some of those freshman arms have been more, you know, generally impressive than him so far this spring. That's more of a compliment to them. But yeah, I think it's pretty clear he will be a starter. He will be back in the rotation. You know, he will be considered good to go. I just think it'll be interesting to see what his inning limits are and his pitch counts and whatnot.
Landon Marceau, one of those freshman pitchers, I saw in a brief role. He was dominant. It gave up maybe one hit in four innings and struck out a bunch and did some really good things there. In fact, he was 4 2/3 inning pitch, one hit, no runs, five strikeouts. He seems to be the next one in line in this ever-rotating pitching staff that just keeps getting players in left and right.
Yeah, I think one of the best examples, and this is just a pulmonary trait in general, of course, but, you know, we're there, we're talking to pulmonary in Dallas. You know, they did a little coaching event back in September before the LSU football opener, and we're talking to him, we're talking about Marceau, and, you know, he's like, listen, I don't like when all these people, you know, I don't like putting these expectations on people, I don't like comparing them to these great players, but he's like, I really think Landon Marceau could be an Aaron Nola type pitcher. I just think he's well. The whole narrative with Landon Marceau going into the to the MLB draft last June, when LSU did not expect to keep him, was he's the most polished and pro ready pitcher. There might be guys with more upside, maybe, but this guy commands three pitches. He's just completely polished and ready for the to get drafted and go on to the next level. Turned down as much as six figures to come to LSU, and he has lived up to that completely. I mean, Alan Dunn gets giddy sometimes. Pitching coach Alan Dunn gets giddy talking about him sometimes. Hmm. You know, in the fall, he dominated in some of those UNO, in the exhibitions against UNO. And then, you know, Paul Mineri was telling us recently that, you know, some days, you know, Jaden Hill, Cole Henry, Chase Costello, they'll look like they might be good enough to really push him for that third weekend rotation spot, you know, and the second one of them puts pressure on him, he goes out and does something like that scrimmage you mentioned where he just blows everybody away and proves like, okay, you know, he is arguably the best pitcher on the staff already.
Wow. Man. Awesome. Brody Miller, kind enough to join. That says a lot.
I have not seen him in a full game yet. We haven't seen him. So, I mean, a lot of this is just extreme hype, and sure. I'm going to be a little skeptical, but it seems like he is the real deal.
Understood. Tell me the saga. Have you talked to Chris Reed? Here's a kid that was basically, see you later. We don't want you anymore. We don't need you anymore. And then all of a sudden here, he's, you know, a couple of weeks before the season opener, and he's, please come back. Please come back. Why and how's he feeling?
Yeah, it's interesting. I will say that one of the funnier things, because we got to go talk to him on Saturday morning, and Paul Mineri had kind of very casually made a comment Friday that, hey, I'm sorry you guys couldn't talk to him today. He's not at practice. You know, if you want to, you can come swing by and talk to him like at 10 a.m. tomorrow. And he was kidding for the most part. And then five reporters show up at 10 a.m. Saturday, and Paul Mineri was confused because everyone was there to talk to Chris Reed, because he is just kind of a fan favorite and a likable guy. You know, I think, and he's having fun with it. You know, he's been joking about how, you know, he's in better shape now than he was then because he's been running so much playing basketball at the UREC. And, you know, he was coaching the 10U Traction Canes team. You know, he's having fun with all of it. The reasoning for why they need him is basically they don't like the depth of their infield right now. I mean, they like, you know, the general starting lineup, but you got, you know, two of your starters are Hal Hughes and Brant Broussard, two guys who haven't exactly proven they can hit consistently at this level. And then behind them, you got some guys with great bats like Drew Bianco and Gavin Duga, who are, you know, the word is just not ready to play defense at the SEC by any means yet. So he was kind of confused about, or concerned, I should say, about that depth. And Chris Reed, you know, for all of his kind of limitations, is somebody who just knows how to play baseball, you know, for lack of a better term. He's just a natural hitter. So I think they liked, you know, they wanted that depth there. The interesting thing is, you know, the part that got missed was they removed Michael Kirsch from the team this week to make room for Chris Reed. The interesting thing is, you know, why was Chris Reed removed in August? I guess over somebody like Michael Kirsch would be the better question to ask.
Interesting. How do you find Paul Mineri now? Because, you know, you got to be careful what you ask for. And it's been a while since LSU has been to the top of the mountain and planted that flag as a national champion. And here they are as the number one ranked team in the country. Be careful what you ask for. How do you find his demeanor right here, right now?
Yeah, it's funny. It's a lot of, you know, he's the one building up all these expectations with a lot of these kids and talking about how incredible they are. And then when we ask him about how incredible they are, he's kind of like, well, let's pump the brakes. You know, I mean, this is, you know, we got to, like, injuries could hurt this any second now, you know. So it's like he's getting scared of his own expectations that he placed on that, which is kind of funny. But, I mean, yeah, Paul is, he's aware of how talented this team is this year, but I also think that kind of adds to its own level of stress is probably not the right word, but it's on, you know, it makes things tense because now you know how talented it is. You really want to make sure you get where you need to with it. You want to make sure you get that College World Series title that you haven't had in 10 years. And at the same time, he's admitted, I mean, it's starting to really beat him up that they haven't won one in 10 years. I mean, he can go through each little detail of you, of every little one in the last 10 years that have gotten away from him, and all the little mistakes he made, or all the little things that just went wrong, you know. Those kind of nag at him. So I think it's definitely building up to him, on him, that he hasn't won one in 10 years. And now you have this loaded roster with all these expectations. So, I mean, I definitely think there's a, you know, I don't think there's any real pressure on Pulmonary, but an internal pressure to make good with it.
We know about the outfield and Cabrera and Duplantis and Watson. We know what they bring to the field each and every game. Who's the new hot shot? Because it seems like every year there's that one guy that comes in and makes a difference. Is there one that they feel comfortable with, albeit we haven't even played a game yet?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's tricky because there are a bunch of them that I genuinely think would have been, but then for different reasons that's kind of going to be put on hold. You know, you got Saul Garza, the catcher who, you know, messed up his knee last season. And, you know, he's healthy. He can hit, but he can't catch until probably late March, maybe early April. So he's somebody, I mean, they have massive expectations about. They think he is going to be just a dominant power hitter for this team. But, you know, so he can't catch yet, so he's just a DH. And also, you know, he's a junior college guy. You never know how those guys will look right away. Then you got a guy like Giovanni Giacomo, who, you know, when they recruited him, they planned that he was supposed to be their starting center fielder day one as a freshman. They did not expect Antoine Duplantis and Zach Watson to come back this year. So now you got a guy like Giovanni Giacomo, who they think really highly of, but he's going to be more of a rotation guy, not see the field as much as, you know, they would have originally expected. So there's a lot of guys like that, or Drew Bianco, who I think has a really bright future, but, you know, his defense is not what they thought it might be, or, you know, I think there's a lot of situations like that. C.J. Willis is one guy, I guess, my answer would be to keep an eye on. You know, he's somebody who, and he's another example, though, if he can't even throw fully for a few weeks because of a shoulder surgery last year. But, I mean, he's expected to be okay, and he'll compete for that first base job. If I had to guess right now, I'd say he had a slight lead in that first base job. So he's somebody to watch there as well.
You know as well as anyone. Well, I know, because Pulmonary, what you see when the season starts is not always going to be your lineup when SEC play starts. So if he's going to be a starter in center field from day one, if he's that good, could you see an outfielder moving to first base? Maybe a Cabrera? I mean, is that a possibility?
Pulmonary hasn't talked about this publicly yet or anything like that, but we did see it practice Saturday that Daniel Cabrera was taking some reps at first base.
Thank you. Yeah.
And Giovanni DiGiacomo actually even took himself, it looked like a few reps there, but maybe not as many. So I think they will, like you said, it was a good call. I think they will, you know, try to experiment with some teams to see if they can get the best 9 guys out on the field. So, I mean, that will be interesting to follow.
So Zach Hess is going to be the starter on Friday. No bullpen for him. So does that mean is Todd Peterson your de facto closer this year?
Todd Peterson is locked in as the closer. Pulmonary has said, you know, he hasn't really figured out yet, you know, what the overall bullpen plan is going to be, or, you know, what the overall rotation is. But he's pretty calm. I mean, he's dead set to Todd Peterson as his closer. I think, you know, they're really excited to see what he can do there after a full offseason in that role. You know, because he's somebody, as you know, who was a starter as a freshman, was a starter for much of the sophomore year, and didn't really take on that closer role until, honestly, I think pretty much the week I started here, first week of May last year.
Yeah, you're right.
And, I mean, he dominated in that role, and he pretty much, as a truly closer, he only, I believe, allowed one run in the last month or so of the season as a closer. So they're excited about the idea of him really dominating that role, and they think he has the persona to match it.
He is Brody Miller, NOLA.com, a Times Picayune. How's that new video scoreboard and all the new bells and whistles at Alec Box?
The board is pretty cool. I won't deny that.
All right. Need to add another year to that intimidator. It's not so much of an intimidator anymore, right? I mean, come on.
No, it's true. And like I said, yeah, Pulmonary, I mean, he's not shy about saying that he really wants to add one more to that intimidator. And he's, you know, he genuinely thinks this is one of the best chances they're going to have for it. So, but it was kind of funny. He said at media day, you know, We're making a rule to our team right now. We're saying today is the one. This was as media day, so this is the one day you guys are allowed to talk about Omaha. This is the one day you're allowed to talk about the College World Series. And then after today, I want you guys to, I want every conversation to just be about the next opponent. So it's on UL Monroe, February 15th. Knowing this team, I don't know how long that will last, but that is the rule.
I like the thought of it. I really, really do. February 15th, season opener, the Warhawks of UL Monroe. Brody Miller will be covering it daily. It's going to be a fun ride for you, my friend. So thanks for the time, and we'll be doing this often if you'll say yes, okay?
Absolutely. Anytime, you know that.
All right, buddy boy. Thank you so much. That's Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, LSU baseball. Number one in the country in just about every poll there is. And if they're not number one, they're number two behind Vanderbilt. Going to be quite a run this year. We'll say it. The road to Omaha begins Friday, February 15th. And, of course, all of the games will be right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's number one sports station. We're back to wrap things up. Stay with us.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, welcome back, kiddos. Football's over. Again, special congratulations in order for a couple of LSU football standouts, Johnny Robinson and Kevin Mawai, who were elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame yesterday, the pair becoming the fourth and fifth LSU players to earn the incredible honor, joining fullback Jim Taylor back in 1976, quarterback Y.A. Tittle back in 1971, and halfback Steve Van Buren in 1965. Robinson's now 80 years young. Thank goodness they did this when they did it. A member of LSU's 1958 national championship team, played 12 seasons in the NFL for the Dallas Texans and the Kansas City Chiefs. Mawai, nearly half the age at 48. LSU from 89 to 93. He was an 8-time All-Pro selection during his 15 years in the NFL. Congratulations to both of them. I spoke to Kevin Mawai, and we're going to get him on at some point in time this week so we can all tell him thank you, and I'm sure you'll have it'll be well worth listening to, so we'll keep you up to speed on that and when it's going to happen. Today he's got all kinds of stuff going on with Hall of Fame. Let's see exactly what he told me. He said, I'd love to come on, but I'm tied up all day for Hall of Fame orientation, and then I'm traveling to get back home. So we'll give him a day or two to settle in, but we certainly look forward to talking to Kevin Mawai on such a prestigious honor that is well-deserved. Alan Faneca, hold on, baby. Hold tight. Don't give up. Don't give up the ship yet. It's going to happen. You just have to wait your time. So just hang in there. But five LSU players in the NFL Hall of Fame. I still can't believe that Burt Jones isn't one of them. Anyway, there you go. So football is over now. Heavy duty of basketball. Yes, indeed. All right, we go to our daily history lesson, right? We do it every day at this time of day. What happened? Well, we go back to this day, February the 4th, the year 2007. Dolphin Stadium, Miami Gardens in Miami, Florida. The Indianapolis Colts beat the Chicago Bears 29-17 in the Super Bowl. 41, and Peyton Manning, the Indianapolis Colts, was the MVP of the game. Yes, indeed. So congratulations on that one. I still love how the Saints Nation treated that day. I still love it. They are the greatest fans in the world. Where else do you go to celebrate not being in a Super Bowl the way they did with the thousands and thousands and thousands of fans just doing a second line all throughout the city? You got to love that. All right, birthday wishes. If today, February 4th is your birthday. Happy birthday from all of us at 103.7 The Game and everyone involved at Delta Media. We hope you have a spectacular day. You share with the likes of 70-year-old Alice Cooper. Alice Cooper celebrating a birthday today. Yes, indeed. Let's see who else is celebrating one. Lawrence Taylor, maybe the greatest football player ever, 59 years old today. So happy, happy, happy birthday to you and to yours. If it's your anniversary, man, happy anniversary. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. All right, so on this anti-Super Bowl thing, we covered LSU basketball. Can they bounce back in a big-time way? It would be a big feather in their cap if they can get to their eighth win in nine attempts when they travel to Starkville. 8 o'clock tip Wednesday night. Pre-game show 7:30. 8 o'clock tip, call of the game right here on 103.7 The Game. So it'll be a busy late night here on Acadiana's number one sports station. LSU has dropped to number 21 in the polls. They are on a six-seeded line from our bracketologist, who we appreciate for coming on today, in Shelby, Mass. LSU counting it down to Wednesday. How are they going to close this recruiting class? We got the very latest from Billy Embody and Go247Sports and LSU Baseball with that big target on their back. They're number one, and they're number one for a reason. They are loaded, but loaded on paper is one thing. Can you get it done through the course of a long, hard schedule? We will find out. But so far, so good. And just stay healthy. So we appreciate Brody Miller. CD, Clint Domain, producer extraordinaire. Outstanding job. Tomorrow, we'll delve into the NBA. The trade deadline's coming up on Thursday. Much more on the recruiting front. Preview of LSU versus Mississippi State in hoops. The Raging Cajuns trying to get back in the win column. And much, much more. So, CD, thank you for all you do. Thanks to all of you for listening. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. And to our partners that make it possible each and every day, you are truly the best. We have only one Monday, February the 4th. Boy, hope you have a great rest of your afternoon and even better evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. This is KLWB Karen Crowley.